Welcome to episode 6 of Nana Cruising, where we unveil the adventures of sailing Cape Louise with your host Stephen Marceau.
Well, welcome back everybody. You recognize this theme song? I think you do. If you're like me and you've been watching all these videos during the winter, today we're talking with Paul from Sailing Cape Louise. In this episode, you'll find out how Paul came about sailing. You'll also find out the process he went through for selecting his boat. This may be helpful to you as well. And also, we'll cover some of his favorite destinations and tips and tricks. I'm pretty excited for this conversation.
Hi Paul, great to finally meet you. I've watched so many of your videos. In Canada, we have some cold winters, so yours are really antidote for waiting for the spring. So,
I get a lot of comments from people in Canada and America, and they say, oh, you know, we're in 4 feet of snow at the moment, and we're watching you sailing around, and our boats are under cover in sheds and, you know, wintering. Yes. We don't have to do any of that because we sail all year round. So
exactly. You're so lucky. But yeah, your video channel is really, really helpful for the Northern Hemisphere people that are stuck in snow. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And those people in England that we often joke, because I think I was inspired by Roger Barnes, who is quite big in England and is part of the Dinghy Cruising Association and all this, that and the other. And whenever he sails, or he quite often sails in really bad weather.
I know, they're tough, those English, aren't they?
And we sit here as we're sailing around watching it going, we're just so glad the weather in Australia is so good, you know?
Yes, yes.
It can get very hot.
Yes.
But most of the time, in fact, we're just coming into autumn now. Well, around Sydney is the best time to sail because there's no humidity. Mm-hmm. Sydney gets a lot of humidity in summer. In autumn, we normally get clear blue skies all day, every day. Mm. The air is slightly crisp, but the water's still warm. So you can still swim for a month or so. But at night, it's nice and cool. So you actually get to sleep, you know.
Absolutely. Wow. You make us want to move to Australia, definitely.
Well, we have friends that moved to Canada, back to Australia. Mm. I mean, people seem to forget that Australia is only 200 years old. You know, we have multitudes of national parks everywhere that they've restrained a lot of construction. Excellent. So, you know, you're spoiled for choice, really.
Yes. Oh, that's awesome. So can you tell me how you got into trailer sailing, how you got started with Cape Louise?
It's a bit of a long story.
That's all right.
You've got time.
We've got time. May have to do multiple episodes. We'll see.
I used to kayak a lot. So basically, I was thinking about this last night. My first memory of sailing, I was about 6 or 7, I think. Mm. I was living in England at the time with my family. My dad, who was Australian, decided he wanted to go sailing or learn how to sail.
Right.
So I remember there was this lake near us, which is more of a pond than a lake. It wasn't that big. He bought this collapsible boat, which sat on top of a roof rack, and it was a flat pack boat sort of thing.
I see.
With a sort of plastic sheeting to go around the wooden hull bit. And we drove up to this pond, and it was in the evening because obviously in England it doesn't get dark till about 10 o'clock in summer. And we got this thing off the top of the car. We pushed the floor in, which was an insert piece of timber.
Right.
And then we went off onto the lake. And that was the start of quite a big adventure because my dad became absolutely hooked.
Really, eh?
Buying various dinghies called graduates, which timber dinghies. A bit smaller than an Enterprise and a bit smaller than a GP14, so about 10 or 11 feet. Mm-hmm. And we used to sail on the lake every Saturday, every Sunday. You know, it went on for years and
good
he became
you.
Really good. Then we used to go into the national state championships and do quite well, you know. I think sailing was somehow in my blood somewhere. Oh. I mean, I'd never say I'm a fanatical sailor. It's just there in the background. When I came out to Australia and my kids are about 6 or 7, I wanted to buy a trailer sailor. And obviously trailer sailors, you're not paying for anti-fouling, you're not paying for mooring fees. Correct. You can and the main advantage
and how louds and splashing.
Well, the whole thing that I think is appealing about trailer sailing is you can go to different places. So most people that have a boat on a mooring, they're only going to sail in the area they've got the mooring, really. Correct. I mean, they might go, you know, I don't know, 10 or 15 miles one way or the other, but they're not really going to go very far, and it's always going to be in the same area.
Right, and unless you take a specific vacation that you expand much more amount of time. But yeah, you're correct. Most of the time, and that was my drawback sometimes. You know, I'm always going in and out 5-10 miles and coming right back in, right?
So. Yeah, there's a lot of very expensive yachts in and around Sydney, and 95% of them only ever motor. I think it's a prestige thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I decided I was going to buy a trailer sailor and ended up getting an Investigator 563, which is an Australian design.
Okay.
And it's fiberglass, and it's about 18 feet long. And the reason I opted for that was I really only had a couple of choices in fiberglass and small. And the other choice was the Compass Kareels, were about the same size, but the Compass Kareels have a centerboard. So even though you had a cabin, you lost quite a bit of a leg room with the centerboard case. Whereas the Investigator 563 doesn't have a centerboard. It has a skeg keel that runs along the length of the boat. So there's no centerboard case. So you've got more room. And that was purely the reason I got the Investigator, because of more room with the young family. So we used to go sailing quite a lot around here. I'm lucky I live in the sort of northern suburbs of Sydney. We've got a lot of large waterways around here, and I can also get out into the ocean if I want to. We used to go sailing on that. And then when my kids became, I suppose, adolescent, no longer cool to go sailing with dad,
right,
I ended up selling it and then took up kayaking. And I probably kayaked for about 8 years or so.
Right.
And I was always looking for a group to go kayaking with and could never really find one. So I ended up going kayaking with another editor friend of mine who was a Kiwi, Torin. And we used to go off doing kayaking adventures together, which was great fun, you know, obviously up and down a lot more rivers as well as lakes.
Nice, nice.
We used to take everything. So the hardest thing was I didn't have a water filter, so I used to take bottled water. And obviously water's heavy, so we can only ever take enough water for about 3 days. And I had a Prigion Proteus fiberglass kayak.
Nice.
And it was crammed to the rim with everything,
right?
And that's
right.
And that's where I discovered, I suppose, dehydrated food, because obviously weight and everything was important. So I ended up buying a dehydrator and dehydrating all my own food.
Yeah, I saw one of your videos about that. I may go that route eventually too. So
also, I don't know what it's like in Canada, but pre-made dehydrated food from camping shops here is quite expensive.
It's very expensive. It's very expensive here too.
In Australian dollars, it's about $11 or $12 per meal, and I could buy an actual dehydrator for $70.
That's right.
So, and you can do 10 meals in one hit, so you've only got to use it once you've paid it off, you know. So,
right. So you're kayaking, and how did you move to finding Kate Louise?
Well, when I got older, I thought, because my wife wasn't really into kayaking, and I thought, oh, as I get older, I want to get another trailer sailor, only this time I want to get a timber one, because I had a fiberglass one before. And I looked around, and the choices, Australia, as I said, is only 200 years old. We do have a bit of tradition of sailing, but there's not a lot of timber boats, unlike England and France, where there's a history of small timber dinghies. We don't really have that.
Right.
So my choices were pretty limited. Basically, boats here that were made in the 70s called Hartleys.
Yes.
They were 16 or 18 feet. They had a cabin, but they also had a centerboard with a centerboard case, and it had the same problem. You know, you didn't have a lot of room in the cabin because of the centerboard case.
Right.
So I looked at those, and there's lots, well, quite a few secondhand ones around in Australia. But being a 70s boat, you know, you can get them with rot. So you've got to be a little bit careful. But they still race them here. I mean, they only had the Hartley Championships about a month ago. So they're still keenly raced by a lot of clubs.
Nice.
But it didn't really fit what I wanted, and I wanted something a bit more traditional, a gaff rig or something like that with a bowsprit.
I love that.
And a mizzen, you know, a bowsprit, a mizzen, and a gaff rig.
Right.
And I looked around for maybe 2 years and couldn't see anything. And then I found a Stornoway 18 that was for sale,
right,
which is actually Kate Louise.
Yeah.
And the people selling it had it on the market for over a year.
You just never came across it for some reason.
Well, I saw it the first time and I thought, oh, no, they wanted too much. I couldn't afford that. A year later, it was still advertised. So I rang them up and I said, oh, is this boat still for sale? And they went, yeah, we've dropped the price. And I went, oh, okay. So then I started negotiating with them and eventually got it. But I had to drive all the way up to Queensland to get it, which is a 2-day drive, basically.
Right. Beautiful boat, though. Definitely.
Well, they're made by Scruffy. Well, they were made by Scruffy Marine up in the Sunshine Coast, and Derek Ellard's the designer,
right?
Who's English, so he's got the English traditional look to it. And you know, he had 4 or 5 other boats in that sort of style, different sizes.
Right.
But now he's in his mid-70s now and wanted to get off the tools because, as you can appreciate, it takes a lot of man hours making a boat.
So I hear they're coming to North America. Have they, I guess, sold the plans or sell some of the business? Yeah. Is that what I heard?
Well, yeah, he basically sold the business to a company called No Coast Boat Works.
Oh, okay.
Which is in Kansas because, of course, there's no coast near Kansas. So it's called No Coast Boat Works. They're going to make them in America. And it's all CNC routed marine ply. It's basically a kit, so you can build it yourself or have it built for you. They're going to start making them there, ship them around the world. Yeah, I'll give you the contact details later if you want to post it somewhere.
Definitely, yeah, I'll post that in the notes, definitely.
Yeah, because I do get a lot of interest from people in America.
Yeah, you're the poster boy for the Stornoway 18, I think.
I'm not sure about that, but anyway. And it's all unintentional. I just started sailing it, and then Derek rang me up, and, you know, we talked about the boat and this, that, and the other, and I seem to be his publicity machine.
I think so.
But it's all right, you know, I don't mind doing it.
It's a great boat.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
So that's how I got into Kate Louise.
So then, how did you get into your sailing channel?
Then I started posting a couple of videos, and then people sort of came out of the woodwork and started contacting me. And and then I found a group on Facebook called Raid Sydney.
Right, now, that's amazing. That's the beauty of that. If you find a group, that's fantastic. Eh?
Yeah. Well, raids, if you put Raid Sydney into Google, it normally comes up with drug raids or something like that.
Oh, my God.
further down the list, you'll find Raid Sydney, and there's a raid in Victoria or Melbourne, and there's one in Queensland as well, and there's one in Tasmania. It's an English and French thing, and probably Scandinavian as well, where originally it comes from the Viking, you know, Viking definition of what a raid is. So basically, you go somewhere.
And pillage. And pillage.
Well, yeah, there's not too much rape. No raping or pillaging, but in Europe, it tends to be sailing or rowing.
Yes.
I could have oars, the Stornoway, because mine's a Stornoway 18, but I don't have oars. And most of the people I sail with, they do have oars, but they don't use them because the boats are too heavy to row a long way, you know what I mean? We tend not to go down rivers too much. We tend to go on lakes.
Right.
But this Raid Sydney group started 10 years ago by a guy called Robin and Kim. Yeah, and I just found it and clicked on it, and they have events every now and then, which is basically a get-together.
They do seem pretty active, so that's great.
Well, I just thought, oh, I asked them, I said, do you mind if I video the first one I went on? And they said, no, sure. So I videoed it, and then I stuck the link on the Facebook page. And other people who had dinghies thought, oh, this looks like fun. We're going with people. So the group has just grown and grown and grown. And there's a lot of what I call armchair sailors, because when I started, I think there was 200 people on the Facebook page.
Yeah, I think now, I've looked at the group. It's like 500 people or so. But
yeah, no, I think it's even more huge, than that now.
Yeah, it's a huge number. And I thought, I only see the same 20, 30 people, I think, on your, in the winter when I watch your videos.
Right? Yeah, so. but I do have to say, of the 500, there's probably only 20 that actually sail.
Right, that's what I thought. Yes, right.
Well, there's quite a few, I mean, to be fair, there's quite a few people building boats or restoring boats as well, so they haven't sort of joined yet or come for a sale. But it's very casual, you know, it's all free. There's no joining fee. It's not an association. There's no rules or regulations. You know, Australians are probably like Canadians, you know, we hate anything to do with being regulated. So,
We're kind of the same. We do have a group here. There's two groups actually around, and, you know, they're the same free group. Just get together. It's called a Can-Am, the Cruising Association, and the Ottawa Mess About group. They're two different groups that go in little adventures like that, and it's all free, like you're saying. It's just getting together. Exactly.
To me, it's all about just having fun.
Right.
And I think we're just really lucky that we found a whole group of people that all come from sort of New South Wales. Some, I mean, some come down from Queensland occasionally. We just go places and have a fun. And it's also, you know, having a fire at night, you know, and sitting around chatting. And nobody, I would say, is a serious, serious sailor, you know, that wants to dominate conversation or anything like that.
Nice. Sounds like a good
just,
group.
They're really nice guys, and, you know, you can have a laugh, you know, and we do, you know. And some of them have built their own boats because, like me, when they were looking, they couldn't find what they wanted. They had the time and the energy to build a boat, which I didn't really. So
I'd love to build a boat, but I'm the same. It's too much energy. So,
well, it's funny because we occasionally, I mean, there's some of the guys in the group have got really good deals on boats. I mean, ridiculously cheap boats. And it's basically some people want to build a boat but don't want to sail. So they build the boat because it's the experience of building a boat.
Right.
And then when they finish it, they go, and they just sell it. And they never really recoup the man hours building a boat.
You can't. Even the material's pretty hard to recoup. So tell me about some of your experience and destinations. I know we hear a lot about Lake Macquarie, I think it's called. And so tell us some of your favorite destinations and experiences that you have with your group.
We tend to go within driving, probably anywhere up to 4 hours from Sydney. Lake Macquarie for me is only 2 hours. But if you live on the other side of Sydney, you've got to come all the way through Sydney. So it's probably 3 hours for people on the south side. But we're lucky because on the east coast of Australia, there are a lot of quite large inland lakes. And when I say inland, they're only just inland. So there's normally a sand spit. And then behind that, there's a lake, which would have been a lagoon once upon a time.
Yeah, I actually looked it up because at first I thought, aren't they sailing in the oceans? You know, they're over there. But now I looked it up. No, they're inland lake.
We're really lucky. Where I am, I can get out into the ocean, but it's only an 18-foot boat.
Right.
You're sailing by yourself. Often we are. Got to be a little bit careful.
Absolutely. You got to respect it.
Well, you're going to get 2 or 3 meter swell. And I think some people go, oh, you know, you never really go up and down the coast. Well, a lot of the east coast of Australia is cliffs, and there aren't that many good harbors that are close to each other.
So it's not like you can, in some places, you know, just go from fjord to fjord.
Yeah, you've got to go a long way and you can get stuck out there. So that's not fine if you're in a yacht. Doing it by yourself in a dinghy, you've got to be a bit careful. So basically, we use a lot of the lakes that are around. And Lake Macquarie for us is about 2 hours north, and Mile Lakes is just another half an hour past there. And Mile Lakes is just fantastic. I go there, I don't know, 3 or 4 times a year probably. And it's all in a national park. The whole thing's in a national park. So you can go there on a weekday and there's nobody there at all.
Right.
And some of the camps, well, most of the campsites you can only get to by boat. So, you know, you just sail there and it's only maybe 4 meters deep at the most, maybe 4 or 5 meters. It really is good sailing, and it can get very windy there because it's right next to the oceans. you get 20 knots coming in, it's going to be 20 knots on the lake. There have been times when we've been up there, you know, you organize to go for a sail and everyone turns up and everyone's been checking the weather for 2 or 3 days before you get up there, and everyone's very keen to get away, and you get there and then the wind turns a bit strong, and we have sat at one boat ramp for a whole day waiting for the wind to die down.
As you can imagine, this was a great conversation, and we'll finish here. In the next episode, we'll do the continuation of the interview with Paul, where we'll cover essential pieces of gear, advices for newcomers into dinghy cruising, some challenging situation that Paul has faced, and maybe talk about some other destination.
As always, we want to hear from you, our loyal listeners. Join the conversation by connecting with us on our Facebook group, Nano Cruising, or visit our website at nanocruising.com, where you can also subscribe to our mailing list to be notified about upcoming episodes. If you liked this podcast, also don't forget to tell your friends. I appreciate the help in making our podcast grow. And finally, share your own dinghy cruising stories. Provide feedback on the podcast and help us steer the course for future episodes of Nano Cruising. Also, if you have some salty stories and would like to share them, feel free to reach out, and who knows, your story could even be featured in an upcoming episode. I'm your Nano Cruising host, Stefan Marceau. Until next time, seize your own adventure.